Hello and welcome. I'm Patrick, your host for this presentation in the Inland Mariners audio series. In this interview, I'm continuing a conversation with Charlie Shoup, Great Lakes vessel pilot, recorded in February of 2021. So you're looking into, what, 94 now that you've are returning back for a spring fit-out?
Spring of 94, yeah. So the spring of 94, I did not make ASC's seniority list. There was some technicality or something. So I wasn't very happy about it. But in the spring of 94, Hannah Marine had a job for me. And I went over on the Medusa Conquest. And you probably remember the Medusa Challenger was a ship, but the Conquest was a barge.
Right. I didn't know that Hannah operated that or pushed that one.
Yeah, the James Hannah was pushing it. Normally, I'm trying to remember what tug normally pushed it, but they had blown up an engine, and they had the James over there pushing it temporarily. I was a barge engineer. I was in charge of ballasting the barge and doing all kinds of shit, maintaining the air compressors and the equipment on the barge.
Now, that had hatch covers and all of that, right?
I mean, it had hatch covers, but they were small little round ports. They weren't like normal hatch covers.
That's right, because she's a cement hauler.
We went from Charlevoix to Owen Sound, Ontario, back to Charlevoix, over to Milwaukee, and then from Milwaukee, we went down to the Calumet River into the South Slip, and we laid it up in the middle of, well, it wasn't the middle of summer, it was in the spring, it was like June or something, because they, I don't know why, but Medusa laid up that barge every year in the, during the season and put a fresh coat of paint, and they did all their stuff when it was warm out rather than in the middle of the winter. Weird. I was only there for, you know, maybe 2 weeks, 3 weeks, something like that.
So that's the spring, so you haven't gone very far into the year yet.
I have not. And matter of fact, I was on it, and I don't remember the numbers, but there was a rule at the Union Hall that if your job doesn't last more than such and such a day, then you don't fall off the, if it doesn't last this many days, then you don't fall off the your spot, you know, because when you take a job at the Union Hall, you, let's just say it's 30 days. After 30 days, your name falls off the board, you go back down to the bottom. And so it's kind of a rotation thing, right?
Sure.
But the job was not long enough that I lost my spot in the rotation, and then I came back to Union Hall. Though this is a pretty good story. You're gonna like this.
Okay.
So I took a job as a gateman on the Buffalo, and it was same kind of deal. It was only like a 1 week job, maybe a 2 week job, but it was very short. But they were having a hell of a time getting a gateman to stay on that boat. Everybody was quitting, and the guy that I relieved, they were unloading coal in Green Bay, and the gateman came down with some respiratory issue and had to be sent up to the hospital. And so they were running without a gateman, and so it was like an emergency job. They needed a gateman right now. They were sailing without a gateman, and they need him. And so I walk into the Union Hall, and they're like practically, attacked me. Said, will you take this job? Do us a favor. We just need you to go over there and do this. And I'm like, okay, yep, no problem. So I go over there. Turned out to be a terrible job for me because I'm 6'7", and I don't fit in the tunnel. That is not the place that I need to be. Banging my head on everything down there, it sucked. But I stuck it out. I filled out the end of the contract, which, again, wasn't very long.
Being a gateman is a whole new experience for you, right?
Absolutely. I've never done that before in my life.
Now, that's not a simple starting job, is it?
It is. Okay. You know, there is a little bit to learn to it. But it's an OS job. Conveyorman is like a skilled job. But the gateman, they pretty much, within one or two unloads, you have a pretty good idea of what you're doing. You can do it safely, but maybe not as efficiently as a gateman that's been there a long time. I mean, but, you know, again, it was an emergency position. They didn't have any choice. I was the only person around to take the job, and I took it.
How did you get trained for that? Did the guy on... Who sort of showed you how to do it?
The conveyorman. His name was Roger, and he was probably one of the biggest assholes I ever sailed with. Oh, man. He was one of those guys that just liked to berate everybody and just a bully, you know, just ran around the boat, his chest puffed out and trying to just be an asshole to everybody. So I started fucking with him. And he got it into his head somehow that I didn't know how to read. And so we were, not only did we work together, but we were also roommates. So he got it into his head that I didn't know how to read. And in our stateroom, he's all like, oh, you know, that's all right. You know, I know some guys that don't know how to read, and they're great guys. Don't worry about it, you know, blah, blah, blah. Being really nice to me. But behind my back, he's going around to the whole crew, you know, telling them, this dumb motherfucker doesn't even know how to read. Where the fuck do they get these people? What the fuck, you know? So he's running all around the ship, and finally it came to a head one day, and I was in the rec room, and the rec room was full of with people, because back then nobody had cell phones and shit, so everybody hung out in the rec room and played cards and actually talked to each other. And so the rec room was full of people, and I'm sitting there and reading a magazine, some car magazine, Carcraft or Hot Rod or something. And he comes in, he's just messing with me, you know, and he says, "You like looking at the pictures, huh?" "Yeah, you know, I like cars and stuff." "Yeah, you know, it'd probably be a lot better if you could read the, you know, articles." "So what do you mean, read the articles?" "He says, well, there's articles in that magazine." I said, "Yeah, I know there's articles in this magazine. What the fuck do you mean, read the articles?" He says, "Well, you can't read." I said, "What the fuck do you mean I can't read?" He goes, "Yeah." You know, because he thought I was, you know, just kind of putting out a front because everybody was there, you know.
Right.
He says, "Yeah, read me this." So I read it. And everybody starts laughing and laughing because he's been running around telling them all that I couldn't fucking read. And they're all looking at him and says, "Sounds like he can read just fine to us. What the fuck?" And he pissed. He come into the fucking room and he's fucking pushing me up against the wall. "You told me you couldn't fucking read, you motherfucker." And I, you know, of course, I'm a fairly good sized guy. I'm not too terribly intimidated by him. And we didn't have it out, but it came close. And after that, boy, did he fucking hate me.
Oh, man. It's a good thing you weren't on there for a long time then.
Well, so here's the rest of that story. It comes time for me to get off. I'm going to get off in Stoneport. Or no, I'm going to get off in Calcite. That's what it is. So the other guy's coming back in Calcite. And Roger was the actual normal gateman. He had been temporarily promoted up to conveyorman while the conveyorman was on vacation. And that's half the reason that he was this big, you know, well, he was always an asshole anyway, but it was even worse because he had been temporarily promoted, and so he was really puffing out his chest because now he thought he was important. And so there was a deckhand on there, and this guy had just lucked into a permanent job with American Steamship. His very first ship, he was a deckhand, and walked right into a permanent job. And like I said, there was a little bit of bullshit that happened with me the year before with American Steam, and I should have had seniority and been on that seniority list. And here comes this guy who'd never sailed before, and who was a refrigeration technician by trade. That's what he did. And he got bored and thought it would be an adventure to come out and sail on a boat, so that's what he did. But his name was Logic. And he had also applied for a job in Antarctica as a refrigeration technician. And that job came through. So he was going to quit his job that day. He was going to quit his job that day and go home because he wanted to take like a month off before he had to go to Antarctica. And I was on there as a gateman, and I was going to get off the boat that day too. And I talked to this guy. I said, "Listen, man, normally I'm a deckhand, and I've got killer card in the hall. I've got the top spot. I'm the number one guy on the seniority roster in the hall. Why don't you ride this boat down to Detroit and get off of Detroit, and I will come and take that job. And then I will have a permanent job with American Steamship." And he's like, "Yeah, well, I would, but my car is, you know, in Stoneport." I said, "Yeah, man, no problem. I'll get off here, I'll get a ride with the grocery man, I'll go down to Stoneport, and I'll pick up your car, I'll drive your car to the Union Hall, I'll get the job, don't call it in until tomorrow morning, I'll get the job, and then I'll drive it down to the mail boat, your car will be washed and clean and full of fuel, sitting there, all warmed up for you at the mail boat." And he said, "Yeah, okay, cool." And so that's exactly what I did. And that's how I got my permanent job with American Steamship Company.
And that asshole gateman was back on his own again.
He was the gateman again. And so now when I'm on the boat, he had the same rank, for lack of a better term, as I did. And I didn't give two shits about what he thought or what he said. And I was on the Buffalo in 94, 95, 96, and 97, sailing with him.
So then when you got off the Buffalo, you ended up going right back to it.
That's right. So now I'm permanent with ASC, and I'm permanent on the Buffalo. So I'm the permanent deckhand on the Buffalo. When I go on vacation, they hire a temporary guy to come in out of the hull and fill my position. And then when my vacation's over, I come right back to the same spot, same bed, same everything.
Tell me a little bit about ASC. Back in those days, they had quite a really good reputation on the Great Lakes, correct?
In the early 90s, ASC was the company to sail for. They paid the wages. They had all the new boats. They treated their guys well, you know, relatively. Yeah, it was a good place to be. I consider myself pretty lucky to get that job. I liked it a lot.
How would you describe the Buffalo? Did it have a nickname? What was their run? What was the kind of the crew? What was she like?
So, it was a much more modern ship. It had pop type clamps rather than butterfly clamps. The butterfly clamps on the Boland are like great big wing nuts. You have to screw each one down individually, and there's a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas on the Buffalo, there was only like 20 clamps per hatch, 21 clamps per hatch, and you just had a clamp wrench, and they just cammed over and locked down. And Mark Robertson was my watchman. Do you know Mark Robertson?
No, I don't. Mm-mm.
He was a guy that was wheeling on the Buffalo when it hit the Detroit River Light.
Ooh.
So, yeah. He's kind of legendary on the Great Lakes, you know, side of things. His father was Arnie Robertson, who was a longtime captain on the Herbert C. Jackson. And Robertson's brothers all sailed, and a lot of them were over at Interlake. But Mark was at ASC. I don't know exactly why. I don't think he necessarily got along with them all that well, you know, kind of the black sheep of the family or something. But he's a character without a doubt. And when he left ASC after the Buffalo incident, he sailed with Grand River, and he sailed with Interlake, and
Were you on the Buffalo when it hit the light?
I was not. I missed it just by a little bit. I knew that I wanted to move up, and I didn't want to be on the Buffalo. I kind of hated the Buffalo. It had Teflon in the cargo holds, and it was short runs, and so I had put in for a transfer, and I had been transferred to the Charles Wilson. So I was on the Charles E. Wilson at the shortcut unloading coal in Detroit when the Buffalo hit the light. So I was literally 8-10 miles away, but I was not on board.
So American Steamship, it had a good reputation as being a great fleet, and I know that's changed now. It doesn't have that reputation any longer.
It does not, absolutely not. It had a really good reputation for a long time. When American Steamship Company bought what was left of Ogilvie Norton, things changed.
Right.
GATX was ASC's parent company, right?
Right.
And they're a global logistics company. They owned all kinds of shit. They owned tank farms and pipelines and rail cars. And only one shipping company is American Steamship Company. Outside of that, they had owned a bunch of weird shit. At one time, they owned part of the Zenith televisions. They owned part of Coleman camping supplies, Coleman lanterns, Coleman sleeping bags, all that shit. And they just became kind of an industrial conglomerate company, you know. And they sold off a bunch of that shit at the same time that ASC was asking them for money to buy what's left of Ogilvie Norton. So they went from being like 7% of GATX's portfolio to like 21% in the course of a year. When they were 7%, GATX didn't fuck with them too much. They didn't care what ASC did. They didn't care. ASC made money every year. Sometimes they made a lot of money, sometimes they made a little money, but they were always making money, and that's all they cared about, and that was good enough. When they became 21% or 23% or whatever it was, now all of a sudden it matters. And they wanted ASC to produce an improved profit every year. When I was captain, I sat in on the company meetings in Buffalo. And I listened to the guys that GATX sent over. I heard them. You know, we have to provide an increased value for our shareholders every year. So if you made this much money this year, then you had to make more than that next year, and more than that the next year, and more than that the next year. And the Great Lakes is a closed entity. It doesn't support that business model. There's only so much money to be made on the lakes, and sometimes ASC gets this percentage and Inner Lake gets that, and sometimes it's the other way around. You know, there aren't more and more customers. There isn't more and more cargoes. You can't just do that. Once all your ships are running and you're moving as much cargo as you can, then that's it.
Right. You're really dependent on the steel market as to, for that, for ore, as to what the price is.
Ore is your number one profit commodity. You make more profit moving ore than you do coal or stone. So, absolutely, the steel market moves around, but GATX doesn't care about that. They got to supply a better return for their shareholders every year. That's the bottom line. And so they cut. They stop painting the boats. They cut. They start taking guys off the boats. They start getting rid of people. They cut and cut and cut and cut and work everybody harder. And they used to feed really well, but now they're cutting into the food budget. They used to have great big Thanksgiving and Christmas dinners. And now all of a sudden they're sending out emails, do you guys really need to have a big feast on Thanksgiving and Christmas? You know, yeah, we do. Everybody's away from their families, out here where it sucks, and all you assholes are at home with your families, and we're not going to go without Christmas dinner. So anyway, that's what happened, and when GATX couldn't cut anymore, they sold it to RAND Logistics.
And that was just recently, wasn't it? A few years ago?
It was. 2 years ago, yeah. But that's why I left. I saw the writing on the wall. I said, man, this can't hold up. I mean, you know, this is, we're crashing here. This is, we're all on a sinking ship, pardon the pun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this isn't going to end well. It can't. There's no end game here. I didn't want to be a part of that.
Let me back you back in time then to 97. You're still on the Buffalo. That was your last year.
Let me fill in one. So in 90, winter of 94, 95, I'm on the Buffalo. I've got my time in to get my AB ticket, but I haven't done it yet. And at the end of the year, everybody wants to go home, and the boat still needs to run. It's December, it's Christmas time, it's New Year's. Everybody wants to be home for those things. So anybody who has any seniority or anybody who's actually good at their job goes home. Even the guys in the union hall that are good, they've made enough money during the summer, they're not going to come out and work the holidays unless they absolutely have to, you know, unless some sort of unforeseen bills pop up or whatever. So you're scraping the bottom of the barrel. The guys you get out there during the holidays usually are not your A-team. And I had this guy working with me, and I was the deckhand, and he was the watchman. So technically, he's my superior, but he doesn't know what the fuck's going on. And the first mate knows that. So the first mate's relying on me to kind of make sure that things run smoothly. And every time this guy fucks something up, the first mate's yelling at me about it. We were at the Sioux Locks, and I had the cable in my hand. I'm on the lock wall, and I've got the cable in my hand, and I'm walking along, and it's time to put the cable out onto the bit. So I grab a hold of the cable, and I start to pull on it, and the watchman is supposed to pay out on the winch, but instead of paying out, he puts it on maximum heave and yanks me off my feet onto my back. And this was like the last straw. And I let go of that cable. I'm being pulled right towards the chalk. Mm. It's not very far from where I'm at to being pulled through the chalk, you know. And I let go of it. So this guy could have literally, you know, ripped my arm off. And I stood up, and the guy saw that I was pissed, and he took off running. He left the winches and ran away. And I hopped because the ship and the lock wall are about the same height.
Right.
So I just hopped back onto the ship, and I took off chasing this guy down the deck. And the mate jumped on my back, and I'm dragging the mate down the deck because I was going to kill him. I was going to hurt him. And anyway, they took and they switched him around and put him on a different watch, so he didn't have to work with me for the rest of the year. And during the debriefing, we'll call it, where I had to go up and discuss things with the captain, they said, well, if you don't fucking like it, get your AB ticket. And I said, motherfuckers. And I get home, and I don't know if they called the union hall or how it all played out in the background, but the union hall called me up and said, hey, do you want to get your AB ticket? I said, fuck yes, I do. So I flew out to Baltimore, and I went to Piney Point in Piney Point, Maryland, the Harry Lundberg School of Seamanship, and got my AB ticket out there.
Was that a class that you went to out there, or did you just take the test?
Yep, it was a class. Normally, it's a two-month class, and they were running a special six-week abbreviated crash course for AB for the Great Lakes guys. And they asked me if I wanted in on a six-week course, and I said, yep. So I went out there, and I got my AB ticket that winter. And then in the spring, I came back. I had an AB ticket, but I was still a deckhand because there weren't any AB jobs. And I was on vacation in the middle of the summer driving my car. I had a cell phone. You know, this is back when they had bag phones. Mm-hmm. And my mom sent me a... They had a pager also. So she sent me a text to my pager and said, you know, call her. So I call her up. She said, the union hall has been calling you all day, and you need to call them right away. I said, okay. I'm in the middle of my vacation. I'm like, you know, they shouldn't be calling me, but whatever. So I call them up, and they said, hey, ASC had a guy quit. Do you want a job as a watchman? I said, fuck yeah, anything to get off the fucking Buffalo. And there was just dead silence on the other end of the line. And they said, well, it's on the Buffalo. I'm like, oh, fuck. And so anyway, I had to go back to the Buffalo as a watchman. As soon as I got a job as a watchman, I put in for a job as a wheelsman. And when I got promoted to wheelsman, it was over on the Indy. Well, I transferred as a watchman over to the Wilson, and I... sailed half the year on the Wilson as a watchman, and then in 97 went over to the Indy as a wheelsman.
Okay, this was 95 you got your AB ticket that winter?
Yeah.
So you went back to the Buffalo in 95. When did you go on the Wilson? Was that 95 or 96?
No, it was 97. No, wait. Let me see.
No, you said you were on the Buffalo through 97, so...
Yeah, so I was on the Buffalo in 97, so then half the year in 97 I was on the Wilson. And so in 98, I was a wheelsman on the... Spring set out in 98, I was a wheelsman on the Indy.
Okay. Okay.
That's how that played out.
Did the union pay for your training to become an AB, or did that come out of your pocket?
Yeah. Nope, they paid for it. It's a union school out there in Piney Point, Maryland.
Okay. I don't know if they take that out of your union dues, or...
Well, yeah, right. Out of the union dues, right. That's what your union dues pay for, is the school and all that shit. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay. So how did you like the Wilson?
I like the Wilson. It got a lot longer runs. It didn't have Teflon in the cargo holds that constantly needed repair. The crew over there was a little bit clicky, but it was all right. But, yeah, I liked the ship a lot.
Tell me a little bit about this Teflon that you have to... Is that like a coating that they put on it?
So they call it Teflon, but it's probably more accurately described as polyethylene or something like that. I think originally the sheets were made of Teflon, but Teflon's awfully expensive. So what it is, think of a sheet of plywood that's made out of white plastic.
Okay.
And it's put on the cargo holds like shingles. So as the cargo runs down, just like the water on your roof, it runs so it doesn't get underneath the shingles, you know. But cargo always gets underneath there a little bit, and... eventually it blisters up, and then that shingle, if you will, tears away, and then you have to go down and put a new one in. And as you're digging underneath this stuff, you find all kinds of shit, you know. You get a lot of contaminated loads out of the Buffalo in those days because you'd be unloading nice, bright, white dolomite in Fairport, and a little bit of coal would slide out from underneath one of the sheets, you know. and now you've got shiny black coal mixed in with your bright white dolomite, and if the customer can claim it's a contaminated load, they get the load for free.
So they kept an eye out on it then.
Oh, yeah. So it was a big problem if we had contaminated loads, you know, so we're always down in the cargo holds. Whenever the ship's empty, there's always work going on down there trying to repair the Teflon to make sure that all the blisters of cargo and shit are remedied, so that it's a lot of work to stay on top of it because it's all the cargo holds on all the slopes.
Right. Where did you catch the Wilson then? That was mid-season you switched over?
Yeah, I'm trying to think.
And how did that come about? You were finally off the Buffalo. That must have been a good thing.
Yeah, so I was pretty happy about that. It was mid-season. I put in for transfer. I got off the ship. I got a couple of days at home, and then I had to go and catch the Wilson. I'm trying to remember where I caught it. Maybe Marquette. In those days, the Wilson was doing a lot of Marquette down to Toledo, Marquette down to, like, McLeod Steel, you know, stuff like that. McLeod Steel is in Trenton. It's back on the backside of Gros Steel.
Oh, okay, okay. I was going to ask you where that is.
Yeah, McLeod Steel, it's long since defunct now. Even then, it was up against the ropes. There were stories of ships showing up, and they had to get a cash payment before they could unload, because the clouds was so notorious for not paying for their cargo. And it's a really tricky place to get in and out of. I mean, back then, I didn't have anything to do with navigation, but since then, there are still docks down that way, and there's a lot of current down there, and there's a pretty narrow drawbridge that you have to go through, and it's quite a pain in the ass. The McKeeson got in a bunch of trouble down there a few years ago, got turned sideways into the current, got pushed all the way down to the bottom of the basin, and had to send a bunch of tugs down there to get them off. It was a big deal.
How was the Wilson? Was that it had a little different layout than the Buffalo, didn't it, in terms of, like, after cabins and pilot house?
Yeah, right. So the weather deck, or the main deck, wraps all the way around the house, where on the Buffalo, you've got to go up. You've got to go up a deck to go around the fantail. The deck on the Wilson is flat. It doesn't have a lot of camber to it, so when you're rinsing the deck, water pools up on deck, and that's kind of shitty. It's not a great design. The Mariner and the White are much better as far as that goes.
So in the winter, that would be a real problem. If it doesn't run off, you're going to get little...
Yep. Yeah, little pools of ice. Yep.
Yeah, oh, fun.
And we did. But, you know, you put salt down and whatever, and it works out.
Okay.
The Wilson was built first, and then the White, and then the Mariner. They kept getting bigger, and, you know, they made improvements to that. But that first one, the Boland, was, it's now the Boland, the Wilson. Their deck's pretty flat. But all in all, I mean, you know, it's a good ship. I like being on it. It was all right.
How much farther do you got to go with ASC before you were done? I mean, you went to the Indy?
I went to the Indy. Van Dugan kicked me in the ass and made me get my license. And then third mate, second mate, first mate, captain, several years as captain, and then I pulled the plug. The year that I left ASC, I was the only captain in the fleet that was certified to drive everything we owned. So, yeah, spring of 98, I was wheelsman, yep.
Did you fit out the year on the Harbor or on the Wilson?
On the Harbor.
Okay, okay. Who was skipper on there, Grunwall?
Grunwall has just retired, Van Dugan.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I know Pete Grunwall, and I got to be friends with Pete, but I didn't sail with Pete.
Okay.
But Mark Fraley did. He sailed with Pete a lot.
Yeah, he was quite the living legend, I think, Grunwall was.
Without a doubt. So Pete Grunwall's first mate was Bob Gallagher.
Yep.
I trained under Bob Gallagher.
Okay, he was the first person I met when I got to the Indian Harbor down on the dock. It was Taconite Harbor in September, and it was fucking snowing out.
Oh, yeah.
It was like, what is this? And, that, you know, that's a narrow dock in there, and the ladder was about, you know, they're fully pumped out, and you got about a foot between the dock and the boat, you know, the wall. And that was a hell of a climb.
Yep.
This concludes this Inland Mariner's audio interview. Thank you for listening. This audio program has been presented by the Inland Mariners, Cypress Pictures, LLC, and Patrick Lipinski. To hear more, go to inlandmariners.com.